Sun warns the EU against meddling in the country's affairs over recent riots. It says it will take reciprocal measures in response to any new sanctions. Several explosions hit a central area in Ukraine's capital, Kiev, amid reports of intense fighting between Russian and Ukrainian forces in Donbas region. South Korea begins joint drills with the U.S. and Japan. It says the war games are a response to Pyongyang's nuclear and missile threats. Welcome to World News here in the Iranian capital. I'm your host, Behzad Rezanjefik. Good to have you with us. Beginning with our top story, the EU has imposed sanctions on Iran over its response to the riots in the country. The sanctions list includes 11 individuals and four entities. They target a section of Iran's police, the Basij Volunteer Forces, and the cyber division of the country's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps. The Iranian Information Minister is also blacklisted. The coercive measures include travel bans and asset freezes. The sanctions were imposed during a meeting of EU foreign ministers. Iran has warned the EU against taking any irrational and meddlesome measures, vowing a proportionate response.
The Islamic Republic of Iran will make a reciprocal and proportionate reaction. This applies to each and every one of European countries. It's also true about the joint stance the European Union is reportedly about to adopt regarding Iran, and the Islamic Republic will immediately make a decision and take action in proportion to their decision and move.
Kanani also slammed European countries for applying double standard to riots in Iran and elsewhere. The spokesman said that they are calling on Iran not to take action against rioters, but they act differently when the same happens in their own countries. Some European officials have criticized Iran for its response to the unrest that followed the death of a young woman last month. 22-year-old Mahsa Amini died in hospital days after collapsing at a police station in Iran. A forensic investigation dismissed allegations that she was beaten up and attributed her death to an underlying condition. The head of London-based Islamic Human Rights Commission, Masoud Chajara, says that there is a clear difference between rioting and protesting, and no world government can allow rioting during protests.
We need to separate the riots from peaceful demonstration. Anyone in their right state of mind will understand the difference between these two and separate them. The reality is people do have legitimate right everywhere in the world. Indeed, in Iran, is part of the Iranian constitution. They have the right to demonstrate, but no one has got the right to commit riots and endanger people's life. I mean, we have seen footage of security forces in Iran being kept and then put a light, petrol put on them and put a light. No government, no authority could allow this sort of behavior to be unleashed in their society, because they have the responsibility and indeed the duty to protect people and create security within the society. You know, I could give you over and over history of what is being done in Britain. I mean, for example, the riots in Bradford, the judge orders and said anyone who holds the stone, even if they don't throw it and they drop it on CCTV, should get 5 years imprisonment. Anyone holding a Molotov cocktail, and even if not throwing it and dropping it, should get 8 years imprisonment.
Now, the Iranian judiciary says that four more inmates have died due to the blaze at Tehran's Evin prison on Friday. The prisoners were earlier said to be in critical condition. Their deaths take the number of lives lost in the fire incident to eight. The judiciary had said earlier that dozens of inmates were also injured. The blaze started the prison's sewing workshop following a brawl involving a group of prisoners. Meantime, security guards say that they have foiled an attempted prison break by some of the inmates convicted of violent and dangerous crimes. The situation has returned to normal at the penitentiary. Iran's Islamic Revolution Guards Corps has launched military drills in border areas in two northwestern provinces. They are conducted by the IRGC's ground force in the Aras River region that borders the Azerbaijan Republic and Armenia. On the agenda of the drills are heliborne operations, night combat, and river crossing exercises, among others. Helicopters and various types of drones will also be deployed. The Ground Forces Commander, Brigadier General Mohammad Pakpur, says the exercise is part of scheduled annual missions aimed at boosting combat readiness. The general says that the drills send a message of peace and friendship to neighbors and a message of warning to enemies that armed forces will give a firm response to any threat. Now, on a related note, the IRGC chief commander is warning Iran's southern and northern neighbors not to allow the Israeli regime to make inroads in their countries. Major General Hossein Salami says that the regime's infiltration into the region is a threat, as it is always engaged in creating insecurity and division. He called for peaceful coexistence in the region, warning that Iran will remain a friend of its neighbors as long as they do not undermine its security. He added that Iran will defend its interests if any geopolitical changes happen in the region. The general also called out Saudi Arabia for inciting Iranian youths in reference to recent riots. He warned that a policy will backfire on the Saudis. The British capital, London, has hosted this year's annual Islamic Unity Conference. The event brings together religious leaders of various Muslim sects together under one roof to promote peace and combat division. Now, this year's event comes amid a global campaign targeting the Islamic Republic of Iran. Robert Carter attended that event and filed a report.
Muslim religious and community leaders from a variety of sects gathered in London on Sunday for the 24th International Islamic Unity Conference. The annual event, held at the Islamic Centre of England, aims to promote religious unity, combat sectarianism, and defend Islamic values.
This event coincides with a similar Islamic Unity Conference held annually inside Iran. The Islamic Republic has come under a sustained attack in recent weeks by Western groups advocating for regime change following the unfortunate death of Iranian woman Mahsa Amini.
Many groups are involved in backing the anti-Iran riots, most notably Western-based Iranian dissidents and supporters of the MKO terrorist group. Although they are divided on doctrine, one factor unites them: Islamophobia.
They are hijacking maybe an agenda to portray this clash of civilization, and they are portraying this narrow-minded, neoconservative narrative that Muslims are barbaric, Muslims are narrow-minded, and Muslims need to be liberated. And this was the type of language that was used at the dawn of the second and the first Gulf Wars, of trying to say we're here to liberate Muslims, we're here to liberate their countries, and this is very dangerous.
These are actual people who have an agenda to make Muslims and Islam enemy number one across the world. So whether it's targeting the Islamic government and the Velayat-e Faqih system in Iran, or whether it's attacking a woman with hijab on the streets of East London, actually the phenomena is rooted in the same thing. It's an actual organized attack on Muslims.
The anti-Iran riots have expanded to include an international campaign condemning Islam and Islamic concepts, such as the hijab. It's now up to Muslim leadership to find ways of combating the tide of anti-Muslim abuse. Initiatives such as this intend to inspire a fight back. Robert Carter, London.
The pilots working for German low-cost carrier Eurowings have started a three-day strike, prompting the cancellation of hundreds of flights.
It is an extremely unpleasant situation for us and most unpleasant for our guests, and I really regret that personally. I apologize to all our guests for the fact that we will not be able to serve the trust placed in us today, and I fear that we will not be able to do so in the next 3 days either. This is extremely annoying.
Eurowings, that's a wholly owned subsidiary of Lufthansa, says it's forced to operate only half of the 400 daily flights until Wednesday. The work stoppage has left passengers stranded at airports in several German cities. A union that represents German pilots says the strike is over workloads and the airline's failure to reach a consensus over wages. It's the third strike to hit the Lufthansa group this year. The previous one forced the cancellation of roughly half of the airline's 500 daily domestic and European flights, stranding around 30,000 passengers. Several explosions have hit the Ukrainian capital for the second time in a week, damaging several residential buildings. According to officials, the city was hit five times. in the early morning attack. The mayor says at least 3 people have been killed and several more hospitalized. Officials say that 3 other people were killed in Russian attacks in northeast Sumy regions. Meantime, the Ukrainian prime minister says that Russian strikes targeted critical infrastructure in 3 regions, knocking out electricity to hundreds of towns and villages across the nation. Russian and Ukrainian forces are also engaged in heavy fighting around Donetsk and Luhansk in Ukraine's eastern Donbass region. Well, we got a hold of our correspondent in Ukraine, Jana Miller, and he tells us more on the latest attacks against Kyiv.
In Kyiv today, we're woken up by the sound of Russian bombing of the capital. It's not clear all the targets yet. You mentioned the train station. It's also looks like it's been confirmed that the headquarters of the main Ukrainian energy company has also been hit. This is in line with Russia's new policy to start hitting civil infrastructure and particularly power stations, energy infrastructure. This, of course, helps to inhibit Ukraine's ability on the battlefield, but also will make life more difficult for civilians. So, as you mentioned, Russia has been hitting Kyiv and other cities increasingly over the last week, and that looks like it'll set to continue. Countries are calling for their citizens to leave Kyiv as the expectation that this bombing will continue.
South Korea beginning new war games in the midst of heightened tensions on the Korean Peninsula. The South says joint drills with the U.S. and Japan are designed to boost ability to respond to what Seoul calls North Korea's nuclear and missile threats. Last week, tensions flared after the North fired a missile, shot more than 500 artillery shells, and flew a multitude of warplanes near the inner Korean border. Seoul condemned the moves and imposed its first unilateral sanctions against Pyongyang in nearly 5 years. But the North has accused the South's military of escalating tensions with its own artillery firing. Pyongyang says its latest military activities are in response to military drills by South Korea and the United States. Pyongyang considers the war games as a rehearsal for invasion. Top EU diplomat Josep Borrell is under increasing fire for a recent analogy that he's made. In it, he drew what many have described as a racist and offensive contrast between Europe and the rest of the world. The comments sent social media into a frenzy. Let's take a listen to some of those reactions. But first, this is Borrell himself.
Yes, Europe is a garden. We have built a garden. Everything works. It's the best combination of political freedom, economic prosperity, and social cohesion that the humankind has been able to build. The rest of the world, and you know very well, Federica, is not exactly a garden. The rest of the world, most of the rest of the world, is a jungle. And the jungle could invade the garden. And the gardeners should take care of it in order to protect the garden. The gardeners have to go to the jungle. The Europeans has to be much more engaged with the rest of the world. Otherwise, the rest of the world will invade us by different ways and means.
Is Africa still a jungle only meant to furnish someone else's garden, as it has painfully been so? You looted the jungle for generations to build your garden. Sit down. Years ago, war criminal Prime Minister Ehud Barak described Israel as a village in the jungle. Today, EU Foreign Policy Chief Josep Borrell describes the EU as a garden in the jungle. These truly are the shared values of these putrid racist colonialists.
This racist's garden only grows because of everything he and those he represents steal from the jungle.
Well, that was interesting. Now, international human rights lawyer John Philpott takes a closer look at Europe's history, contradicting Borrell's claims.
Our common sense will tell us it is racism, but we have to look at European history from the slavery period or even after 1885 when they took over and divided Africa. There is a long history of Europe's supremacy, which has been replaced largely a lot by American supremacy. And the term jungle, I mean, I grew up in English Canada. The jungle has a connotation of uncivilized people. I don't believe that, all right? But I grew up as an English-speaking Canadian with those concepts, which are deeply inside us. And so this is what the European supremacy is all about. And let's just look at recent history. The war on Algeria, when France
killed so many Algerians who wanted to be independent. The jungle is the behavior of the French soldiers. The war in Kenyan independence movement fight, I think it was 200,000 people. Central, a lot of them were Kikuyu people in Kenya, were killed by the British. The jungle is the British behavior, not the African, the Kenyan behavior. We see them imposing sanctions on Ethiopia to try and make people poor and starve and not be employed. Who are the people who are acting by the laws of the jungle? We talk about the term laws of the jungle where there's no rules. It's the West which is doing it.
And, of course, there are more examples as such. Now, parties to the war in Yemen have signed the last list of prisoners to be swapped between Sana and Riyadh under the Amman Agreement. Our correspondent, Abdul Latif Al-Washir, reports from Sana.
The Prisoners Affairs Committee of Sana'a signed the last list of prisoners with Saudi Arabia, under which inmates will be exchanged between Sana'a and Riyadh. Head of the committee, Abdul Qadir Al-Murtada, said the database that was an obstacle to the implementation of the agreement has been corrected. Al-Murtada said a visit by the Sana'a delegation to Saudi prisons was successful, as the Yemeni prisoners were reassured that the swap deal would move forward. He hoped that the reciprocal visits will be a first step towards settling the humanitarian issue of the prisoner exchange.
The results of the recent visits were positive. The lists were corrected for both parties, and the names that will be exchanged between us and Saudi Arabia in the coming days have been signed. We in the National Committee for Prisoners Affairs consider the prisoners issue as a humanitarian one. We should not be linked to military or political matters. If all parties are serious enough to resolve this issue, it will open up prospects for setting other issues as well.
Recently, a Saudi technical delegation visited Sana'a, while another from the Prisoners Affairs Committee of Sana'a entered Riyadh to verify the names of prisoners of both parties.
The warring sides in Yemen have taken a new step toward peace by visiting each other for the first time. Observers say if the prisoner swap deal moves forward, it could help end the war. Abu Latif Al-Washali, Sana'a.
That's a wrap for this news bulletin. Goodbye.
Fruitful Moments with IRIB English Radio. Log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
in the limelight.
A spokeswoman for Florida Governor Ron DeSantis has confirmed that the Florida governor will continue to fly migrants to Illinois and Delaware. We have taken a look at some of the U.S. media's coverage of this issue. Please stay with us. The British newspaper The Guardian has more on this story. The Republican governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis, plans to continue flying undocumented migrants to Democratic strongholds, his spokeswoman said on Saturday, a day after release records showed the state paid nearly $1 million to arrange two sets of flights to Delaware and Illinois. Documents released on Friday showed that the planned flights will transport about 100 migrants. They were scheduled for before 3rd of October, but were halted or postponed. The contractor hired by Florida extended the window for the trips until 1st of December, according to memos released by the State Transportation Department. Asked why the flights were postponed, Ron DeSantis' communications director, Taryn Fenske, said Florida had been busy dealing with the aftermath of Hurricane Ian. While Florida has had all hands on deck responding to our catastrophic hurricane, the immigration relocation program remains active, Taryn Fenske said. The flights would be a follow-up to 14th of September flights from Texas to Martha's Vineyard, Massachusetts, that carried 49, mostly Venezuelan migrants, to the island where the former President Barack Obama owns a home. Local officials were not told in advance that the migrants were coming. The Republican governor of Florida, Ron DeSantis, claimed responsibility for the flights as part of a campaign to focus attention on what he called the Biden administration's failed border policies. He was joining the Republican Texas governor, Greg Abbott, in sending migrants to Democratic strongholds without advance warning. Ron DeSantis is also thought likely to run for the Republican presidential nomination in 2024. Earlier this year, the Florida legislature approved a $12 million budget item to relocate people from Florida to other locations throughout the United States. The money came from the interest earned from federal funds given to Florida under the American Rescue Plan, legislation passed to help states recover from the COVID pandemic. While the migrant flights to Martha's Vineyard in Massachusetts originated in Texas, the charter plane carrying them made a stop in Florida. Ron DeSantis has said that migrants' intention was to come to Florida. The documents released on Friday gave no details of how migrants were recruited in San Antonio, Texas, for the Martha Vineyard flights, or who was hired to conduct that part of the operation. The Martha's Vineyard flight has also spawned lawsuits accusing Florida of lying to the migrants to get them to agree to the flights. The New Yorker magazine has more on the same story. A couple of weeks back, The Economist published a long cover story on the disunited states of America, detailing how, on issues such as abortion, guns, voting rights, and immigration, America's red and blue states are engaged in a new politics of confrontation. As if on cue, Ron DeSantis, the Florida governor, who often seems as if he is campaigning to succeed Donald Trump as the nation's provoker-in-chief, staged his latest political stunt. Using Florida taxpayers' money to charter two planes to fly about 50 undocumented migrants, mostly from Venezuela, to Martha's Vineyard in Massachusetts. Ron DeSantis was not even relocating the group from his own state. The flights originated in Texas. The authorities in Massachusetts moved the migrants to the mainland on Friday, and as the migrants settle into the military base on Cape Cod, there are still myriad unanswered questions about the flights. Who exactly organized them? Were any Texas officials involved? What, if anything, did federal immigration authorities know about the maneuver? And were they even legal? In drawing up Florida's state budget for 2021-2022, the Republican-controlled state legislature allocated $12 million of interest generated from unspent COVID relief funds for the transportation of migrants. But the legislation said this money would be used to move unauthorized aliens from this state, not from Texas. The U.S. Attorney for the District of Massachusetts, Rachel Rollins, said she's looking into the legality of the flights, and Gavin Newsom, the Democratic governor of California, has called on the U.S. Justice Department to explore the possibility of bringing federal kidnapping charges. Ron DeSantis, who's currently running for re-election, remains utterly unrepentant about exploiting as political props a group of migrants, some of whom were apparently misled into thinking that they were headed to Boston and told they would receive jobs and housing. He glibly framed the move as an act of service. "We're not a sanctuary state," he said, "and it's better to be able to go to a sanctuary jurisdiction. And yes, we will help facilitate that transport for you to be able to go to greener pastures." Of course, Ron DeSantis isn't the only Republican governor to have dispatched undocumented migrants from red states to blue states. He seems to have got the idea from Texas's Greg Abbott and Arizona's Doug Ducey, both of whom have been sending busloads of migrants to Chicago, New York, and Washington, D.C. on Thursday morning. Two buses dropped off about 100 migrants outside Vice President Kamala Harris's official residence. The Fox News Channel reported that they, too, were mostly from Venezuela and had been picked up in the Texas border city of Eagle Pass. In discussing the recent escalation in tensions between Red America and Blue America, The Economist noted, "Echoes here of the tussles between southern and northern states in the final years of the antebellum era." But the magazine also stated flatly, "America is not going to have another civil war, as some feverish pundits speculate. That is a debate for another day, but what is abundantly clear is that the migrant stunt has provided a preview of the 2024 presidential campaign, in which Ron DeSantis is likely to feature prominently. In trying to position himself as a viable conservative alternative to Donald Trump, Ron DeSantis is using emotive issues such as immigration and abortion and school curriculums to raise his national profile as a culture warrior. His strategy reflects the makeup of today's Republican Party. As my colleague Benjamin Wallace Wells pointed out in a piece earlier this week, on the midterm elections, focusing on culture war issues enables the GOP to energize its electoral base of white voters without college degrees, and also to gloss over the growing chasm in the party between those actively supporting Donald Trump and his big lie about the 2020 presidential election and those trying to maintain some semblance of independence.
The Gate of Knowledge. Exegesis and interpretations of the supremely eloquent sermons, letters, and sayings of the Commander of the Faithful, Imam Ali ibn Abi Talib, peace be upon him.
جنة وسي المصطفى حقا إمام الناس. You're listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio with Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Qom.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين والصلاة والسلام على سيدنا محمد وعلى أهل بيته الطيبين الطاهرين. Dear listeners to IRIB English Radio, Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. I welcome you all to this episode of The Gate of Knowledge, where we are discussing about the topic of prophethood and messengerhood, and we are focusing currently on the idea or on the reasonings behind the coming of the prophets and messengers on earth. We're basing our discussions on the first sermon at the moment, inshallah, until we go through other discussions in the coming sections. We are currently discussing about why messengers came, why Allah sent these messengers. One of them, of course, was the fact that the people had forgotten the covenant, or rather the prescription that God had placed on their shoulders. That was one. Another thing that we discussed was that Imam Ali alayhi salam says that there was a lot of disunity, and one of the factors of disunity was that وَأَهْلُ الْأَرْضِ يَوْمَئِذٍ مِلَلٌ مُتَفَرِّقًا. People had become groups of different thinking. People were divided because they had different ideologies, different worldviews, and therefore they separated in that sense. They had a completely different culture. There was no uniting culture that could unite all of them. So that uniting culture was not existing, unfortunately. Yes, it's okay for every community to have its own type of culture, but there should be a general culture that unites all the human beings together. But that was not happening at that time. وَأَهْوَاءٌ مُنْتَشِرَةٌ. And the other problem was that the ideals, the desires, or rather those the aims and objectives of the community were different. Inshallah, we'll come in the next segment. We'll explain about this properly.
You are listening to the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio, a program that presents a detailed commentary of Peak of Eloquence from the Master of the Faithful, Imam Ali, peace be upon him.
Welcome, dear listeners, to IRIB English Radio. We are discussing about the reasons why messengers and prophets came. And Imam Ali alayhi salam tells us one of the reasons was that وَأَهْوَاءٌ مُنْتَشِرَةٌ, that at that time people had different aims and objectives. Now, this can be interpreted in two different ways. One of the ways is that we say that people in general were divided into, for example, in one community, were divided into castes and classes. So you can see the lower class, their aims and objectives would be just to, you know, get something on their table. Their concern is that we need to buy food, we need to buy clothes, we need to do this. I mean, just the basic needs, you see. That was one group. Another group of people, their aims and objectives were how they can, you know, just, you know, earn more and more in this world. You know, how much they can enjoy different types of pleasures. This was a higher group, let's say. How can they... There was the middle class, and the middle class, their aims and objectives and their whims and their longing was how can they, you know, climb the ladder of progress and maybe one day become the rich class and the higher class. So this was... You can see the society was divided into different groups, each group having their own aims and objectives, their own longings, their own you can say their own types of desires of what they want to achieve in life. This is one very important interpretation, and in fact it's something that we see that in this world of today also we find that. And that is why there is a great thirst amongst the people, that there has to be a savior to come and save us from this. That why is the world like this? Why have all these blockades happened in this world, that people are divided into classes? In those days, of course, the caste system, for instance, was a very, you can say, evil example, as one of the worst examples you could have of this type of division. And you'll see sometimes some people in the world, even today, in some parts of India, are ready to, observe these systems that are completely destructive towards the society in general. So Imam Ali alayhi salam says this is one of the dangers that the people were facing. And this was something that was extremely unbearable because it was stopping the society to grow. This classification, this division, these barriers, these boundaries that did not allow, that were such boundaries that did not allow one group to enter another group. That one group could not even think about, for example, getting a wonderful education or a good house or something that would be, a good thing that in their life. They just couldn't think about it. And this was a plague that needed to be sorted out very quickly.
Stay tuned to the IRIB English Radio.
Welcome back, dear listeners, to IRIB English Radio. So we say that one of the reasons that Imam Ali alayhi salam talks about here is وَأَهْوَاءٌ مُنْتَشِرَةٌ, the reasons why messengers came. People were divided into groups, into classes, into castes within the society, and all of them had different aims and objectives, and they couldn't mingle with one another in a good way. For example, when we had the feudal system, there were those feudal lords, okay, in the olden system before the coming of the capitalism and the coming of communism. There was a feudal system. And this feudal system, you had those lords, those who had the land, and there were the serfs, there were the tenants who used to stay on that land. And there was no way that class system could be broken in a way that, those lower class people could come up. They just couldn't aim for something higher. You see, this was a problem. And today also we have it, but in an unwritten way. In the capitalistic system, it's like that. Those that earn the capital have all the freedom to hope for the best, to achieve whatever they want in this world, while those who are poor, they can't even think about it. They can't even, dream about it. Even if they dream, it's like they are told, just keep quiet and turn away. Anyways, this is one example. This is one interpretation of this. The other interpretation of وَأَهْوَاءٌ مُنْتَشِرَةٌ is that the world was divided in such a way, the people of the world, that there were a few, aims and objectives. There were a few poles in the world, and everyone and each group were longing for a direction in that pole. There was a polarization, basically. There were, for example, three, four major, powers which had that final say regarding where the society goes. Inshallah, we'll discuss about this. What does it mean? What this polarization meant, and how these four, five poles that existed would define the aims and objectives of those communities, inshallah. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Sheikh Mukhtar, a graduate of Islamic Seminary of Rome, on the program Gate of Knowledge on IRIB English Radio.
قال النبي محمد من كنت مولاه هذا علي سيد فاز من ولاه هو بالكتاب مسدد والنور معنا باب العلوم ومرشد هو آيات الله من ناداه وفي المحاسن أحمد والوحي ربا.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
The Limelight.
Yemen's Ansar La resistance movement slammed the Saudi-led coalition for failing to renew the United Nations brokered ceasefire deal amid deteriorating humanitarian crisis in the impoverished Arab country. The movement said the coalition of aggression is responsible for the failures to extend the truce deal and worsening humanitarian conditions. Concerning this issue, we have taken a look at some of the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. Yemen's Al Masira News Network reports that the leader of Yemen's Ansar Allah resistance movement demanded an end to the Saudi-led war on his country, calling on the Yemeni nation to continue to resist the Saudi aggression, which has been supported by the United States of America and the Israeli regime. In a recent speech to mark the birth anniversary of Prophet Muhammad, blessings of God upon him and his progeny, Abdul Malik al-Houthi urged the war coalition to stop the aggression, to lift the siege on Yemen, and to end the occupation of the country. He also called on our dear people to continue confronting the aggression as long as it continues. Elsewhere in his remarks, Abdul Malik al-Houthi said the United States and the Israeli regime, as well as their acolytes, seek to enslave nations. He said the United States and Israel have directed all their endeavors towards bringing people out of light and into darkness. Tens of thousands of Yemenis flocked recently to the squares in the capital, Sana'a, and other cities to celebrate the Holy Prophet of Islam's birthday anniversary. The participants urged Muslims across the world to stand against Western imperialism. They held banners against the United States and Israel, which have supported the Saudi-led military aggression against their country. The rallies came just a few days after a United Nations brokered truce arrangement between the Ansar Allah movement and the coalition came to an end. The truce first came into effect on 2nd of April for an initial two-month period and was extended twice until 2nd of October. Saudi Arabia and its allies, most notably the United Arab Emirates, have been waging a war against Yemen since March of 2015, trying in vain to reinstall the exiled regime of Abdurrahb Mansour Hadi. The military campaign, which has been enjoying unstinting arms, logistical and political support from the United States, has killed hundreds of thousands of Yemenis and turned the entire country into the scene of the world's worst humanitarian disaster. In recent months, Yemeni officials have issued stern warnings to the Israeli regime about its role in supporting the Saudi war in Yemen. In a warning to the Saudi-led coalition and the countries supporting it, Yemen's defense minister said recently that the country's armed forces are capable of hitting targets far beyond Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates. Yemen's Defense Minister, Major General Mohammed al-Atifi, said, "We will never hesitate to bombard very sensitive and important facilities, and we will include them in the list of our future targets." Fast News Agency explains more about the same story. Yemen's Ansar Allah Popular Resistance Movement said a Saudi-led coalition, which has been attacking the country since 2015, is entirely responsible for the failure of a United Nations brokered truce arrangement between Sana'a and the aggressors. Spokesman Mohammed Abdel Salam made the remarks in a tweet on Thursday, 13th of October, saying the ceasefire ended and was not extended due to the aggressor country's disregard for humanitarian demands and natural rights of the Yemeni people. The United Nations-mediated truce arrangement expired on 2nd of October amid the invading coalition's constant violations of the agreement and its refusal to properly lift the siege that it has been enforcing against Yemen simultaneously with the war. Mohammed Abdel Salam also named some of the obstacles that the coalition has been throwing in the way of truce's extension. He said the coalition had refused to reopen the Sana'a International Airport and Yemen's lifeline, Al-Hudaydah, the port of Al-Hudaydah, and denied that the government in Sana'a access to the country's oil and gas wealth so it can pay the Yemeni people's salaries. The spokesman noted, "Peace in Yemen is not possible unless the invading countries abandon their arrogant mentality." Meanwhile, the Yemeni foreign minister said there will be no talks about extension of the United Nations brokered truce arrangement until the nation's legitimate demands are fully met, stressing that the Sana'a-based National Salvation Government will make every effort to establish just and dignified peace throughout the war-torn country. Hisham Sharaf made the remark at a meeting with the Assistant Secretary General of the United Nations for Humanitarian Affairs and Deputy Emergency Relief Coordinator in the Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, Joyce Masuya. The meeting took place in Sana'a, the Yemeni capital, recently. The Yemeni Foreign Minister, Hisham Sharaf, emphasized that the only solution to offset the adverse consequences of the ongoing humanitarian disaster in Yemen is to immediately stop the Saudi-led aggression, to lift the sanctions against Yemen, and end any kind of foreign military presence on Yemeni soil. Al Mayadeen television network covers the same story from a different angle. A senior member of Yemen's popular Ansar Allah resistance movement warned the country's armed forces will target oil facilities deep inside Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates in case the Yemeni people's rights are not fulfilled. Recently, Mohammed al-Bukhaiti, a member of Ansar Allah's political bureau, said Yemeni people have their rightful demands. He warned that Yemen's army has the ability to target Saudi Arabia and United Arab Emirates oil installations if those demands are not met. Moreover, a spokesman for the Yemeni Armed Forces, Brigadier General Yahya Sari, also warned that foreign companies with operations in Saudi Arabia and the United Arab Emirates to immediately leave those two countries. In a post on his Twitter account, spokesman for the Yemeni Armed Forces, Brigadier General Sari, renewed the warning for foreign firms stationed in the two aggressive countries. He said they should move their operations to other countries, to other less risky countries, in order to prevent further losses. Earlier, Brigadier General Sari had noted the warning will stay in place as long as the US-Saudi-led aggressive aggression countries are not committed to a truce deal, and give the Yemeni people the right to exploit their oil wealth in favour of the salary of the Yemeni state employees. He also asked the United Nations to step up its humanitarian programs in Yemen to provide the crisis-hit country with more food and more medical supplies, as well as financial aid.
You have just listened to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily from 1520 to 1620 UTC on the following frequencies. 25 meters, 11,865 kilohertz for the Indian subcontinent, and FM 91.5 MHz for Tehran. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird Eutelsat 3B and Iran Sat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program PO Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
Oh Lord, here I am, pleading at your door. Send me your mercy, send me your peace, or I am lost for sure.
Hadith of the day.
Here I am, yearning for your cure. This humble servant will be diverted from you no more, no more, no more.
You're listening to the program Hadith of the Day with Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha on IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Welcome to our program Hadith of the Day here at IRIB English Radio. Today on Hadith of the Day, we're going to be looking at a very beautiful hadith which has been narrated from the Holy Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. This hadith is about a very important topic and one of the very central virtues within Islam. That is entertaining a good opinion about the deed of a believer. For example, let's say that you step outside of your house and you see somebody in your neighborhood sneaking around, right? And maybe peering into the window of another person's house, right? Immediately, you might think this person is either, a perverted person looking into other people's houses. He wants to look at, other people's women, God forbid. Or, for example, he's a thief or something like that. It's a thing that immediately comes to mind, right? But this is wrong. This is wrong. We should try to, of course, we should be careful. This doesn't mean that we should be unprecautious, And if we feel a sense of danger, we shouldn't protect ourselves. But at the same time, we should entertain a good opinion about this person, about a fellow believer. This is kind of like paradoxical almost. And a lot of times people cannot reconcile both of these sentiments with one another. Being precautious on one hand, and then also entertaining a good opinion about, you know, one's believer, one's brother in faith. But it's necessary to kind of reconcile them, you know, based upon, you know, these hadiths that we have. The Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam said, make an excuse for your fellow believer. And even if you do not have an excuse for his behavior, then seek out an excuse for him. Right? And if you can't think of an excuse for him, kind of say that, oh, there must be some excuse, I just can't think of it right now. Right? And you know, a lot of times, you know, conflict between people, enmity between people arises out of these, you know, unjustified suspicions that we have with one another. I remember one time, you know, one of my friends, this is on a personal note, he was used to, you know, in the mosque before he used to go home, you know, he used to come and stand with his sister in the mosque, and he used to talk to her, you know, about what's, you know, about something, you know, or whatever. And, you know, a lot of times, a lot of people in the mosque, when they used to see him with her, you know, they would say that, look at this person, he's talking to women in the mosque. And, you know, so these are things that, you know, is very wrong, and we should try to avoid it to the best that we can. Imam Ali alayhi salam has been reported to have said, see the best in any situation involving a fellow brother until you experience something from him which proves you wrong. And do not assume the worst about something that your brother may say if you can find the possibility for good therein. Right? You know, so until, as long as we can, we should try to make excuses for our fellow believers. And this is a virtue. Imam Ali alayhi salam said, entertaining good opinions is a comfort to the heart. Right? When we become overly suspicious of people, right, this has a negative effect on our psyche, right, our heart, and you know, it kind of weakens, you know, our psyche and our, and even our faith. Thank you for joining us here on Hadith of the Day. We were looking at the importance of entertaining good opinions about the deeds of our fellow believers in the words of the Prophet Muhammad sallallahu alaihi wasallam. Until next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
That was Dr. Shiraz Hossein Agha for the program Hadith of the Day on RIB English Radio.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad. Allahumma salli ala Muhammadin wa ali Muhammad.
Joining us now from Ontario, Canada.
Now back to our story.
What is it in there?
We will be talking about this.
Let me bring in Leo Sazdi. He's a professor of international.
The Spotlight.
The rally against soaring living costs and climate inaction has been held in the French capital, Paris. This might as well take place in many European cities that have been plagued by the same crisis, namely a cost of living crisis. Why are European countries not able to resolve their economic problems? Is it purely because of a lack of energy and high inflation? And is this all because of the Ukraine conflict? Well, in this edition of the Spotlight, we will dig deep to see if European politicians